Welcome to the Bulls Show. It is Sunday, November 6th. I'm your host, Nils, and with me are two guys whose baseball team did not win the World Series this past week. Mitch and Ricky, what is going on, gentlemen?
Yo, you had to wrap it in early, didn't you?
I had to get
my shots off.
I work downtown now. Friday was probably one of the worst days of my life. I started off getting on an empty train, typically an empty train, coming on the blue line from south. It being filled with drunk 15-year-olds at 8 o'clock in the morning.
Lifelong Cubs fans, right?
Yeah. It continued from about 9 to 2:30. It was constant cheering that I could hear from the 43rd fucking floor, and going home, just this stepping over bodies and people. I mean, it was a bad day. It wasn't great.
You know, you express all that pain and misery, and I'm absolutely jealous that you got to experience that. Since, of course, I'm no longer in Chicago, but it would have been pretty dope to be part of the 7th largest human gathering in the history of the world.
Bullshit.
Hey, well, you know, for a lot of people listening to this pod who aren't White Sox fans like me, and who may have jumped on the Blackhawks bandwagon the last few years, again, like me, this is really, you know, the first time one of our teams has won a title in 18 years, of course, dating back to 98 Bulls. I mean, obviously, you guys experienced it in 2005. And let me tell you, man, experiencing a title as an adult fan is infinitely better than experiencing it as a kid. So this was pretty awesome.
Yeah, not happy for you. Go ahead.
Well, I'll probably have to remind you guys of the Cubs winning the World Series throughout the summer. I've spent an embarrassing amount of money on Cubs memorabilia this past few days, and which leads me to believe that I'm definitely going bankrupt if the Bulls were to ever win, you know, the title.
Yeah, I spent my Friday thinking, you know what? The Cubs won the World Series. And I was not bitter about the Cubs until they actually won. But, you know, hearing all the cheers, I was thinking, you know what? I've got a great basketball team. They may not win the championship, but they're going to be a competitor. And then Friday night and Saturday night happened, and yeah.
I was going to say, we do got to shift from, you know, one Chicago championship team to another Chicago team that might not exactly have the same ceiling or expectations. Of course, I am talking about the Chicago Bulls. But before we even dive in, we did want to put a bit more structure into our weekly shows. So some housekeeping for our listeners out there. Here's what you can expect more or less going forward. Of course, I say more or less because, as we know, we tend to digress and move on to tangents. But what we want to do is kick things off with each episode, recapping the week, you know, based on the events of the week, and try to answer what we're calling the big question based on, you know, what we learned from the week. That'll be followed by our Bulls MVP of the week or the Bull of the week. And then we'll look ahead at the upcoming schedule. You know, maybe there's some gambling implications embedded in there. And then we'll wrap things up with a quick look around the league. How does that sound, fellas?
Sounds
good. What you mean?
All right. So to start, you know, what a week it's been. Bulls start the week just destroying the Brooklyn Nets, who may not even be a D-League team. That, of course, happened on Halloween. And they start the season 3-0, first time they've done that since the Dynasty years. And then suddenly, you know, there's this outpouring of praise and the Bulls being so weird that it might actually work. They're slated to go 82-0. Then that's followed by a game which maybe five people saw, including you two, since it conflicted with Game 7 of the World Series. Bulls did battle back against a depleted Boston squad on the road, but they did fall short in the waning minutes. So had their first loss of the season. Followed by this past Friday, which of course was Derrick Rose and Joakim Noah's return to the United Center. Those two got their revenge in a win over the Bulls. And then last night, Bulls get owned by the Pacers. So three up, three down. In a blink of an eye, the Bulls go from being undefeated to 500. And so here's the big question. Did the Bulls get exposed this week? You know, in the infamous words of Dennis Green, are they who we thought they were? Ricky, we'll start with you.
Yeah, I think it's possible. You know, it's just like two completely different teams. Those first three games, like, obviously you as a fan, like, you don't want to draw too much out of that. But, man, they just looked so good that was pretty convinced that they were at least a playoff team. And then after these last three games, it's like, who knows anymore? Who knows what team we're going to get Monday against Orlando? Or, you know, they play Wednesday, they play Thursday this week. So were they exposed? I mean, I certainly think that's possible that they were. But I guess, you know, what we really learned this week is that that's sort of like turning defense into offense, like fast break off every miss, every turnover, that sort of style of play that we saw from the first three games, that pure Hoiball might not be there every game. It's not going to be there every game because it definitely wasn't against the Pacers, and it wasn't against the Knicks either. So I think, you know, that's my main takeaway from the week is just like, you know, we thought that if nothing else, hopefully they'll play this, you know, style of basketball that Hoiberg wants them to play every single game. That's not going to be the case.
Mitch, what's changed the most between, you know, the first three games and the last three games?
Well, I think that we really saw in the first three games the case on why the Bulls may be really good. Just as Ricky said, a defense that turns the ball over, kind of fast-breaking offense, a team that's super unselfish, has a really high basketball IQ, or moving the ball around. I think in the next three games we saw why the Bulls may fail, that theory. And I think it's three things, right? It's first, the defense just does not look good at all. When you have Rondo and Cannon, who played a lot of the backup point guard minutes after MCW got injured, you just don't have it going at the top of your defense. That kind of spills into Fred Hoiberg having some rough games in the last, especially in that Celtics game. And then finally, Rajon Rondo, when it's good, it's good. When it's bad, it's real bad. So you have these three kind of big things: defense, Fred Hoiberg, and the overall player Rajon Rondo. If the Bulls play below 500 for the rest of the season, I think you'd point to those three things.
Yeah, their defense is basically what we expected from a team that's, you know, not strong on the perimeter outside of Jimmy. And experiences a significant drop-off when, you know, Taj and Rolo are out the game. Even Jimmy, he's been kind of terrible on the perimeter. I remember watching a play last night against the Pacers where Jeff Teague just blew by him like he was nothing. And this is all-first team defense last year? Was it second team? Whatever the case, Jimmy hasn't been as good as previously advertised. You guys already mentioned, you know, the rebounding advantage is decreasing, the ball isn't moving as much, they're not getting out in transition. And I think the biggest thing, as you touched on, Mitch, that's been more or less exposed is their point guard play. You know, this team might be only as good as Rajon Rondo takes them.
Yeah, I thought Rondo's defense against Teague in the Pacers game was really atrocious. In the first three games, one thing I liked is that he was so aggressive going for steals, especially on switches. I remember a couple plays where, you know, as soon as he would be put in a pick and roll, he would just attack the ball and go for it. And, you know, a few times he was able to come away with the takeaway. That wasn't the case last night. Just early in that game, right away, Paul George is hitting like absolutely wide open threes in transition. The Bulls' transition defense was terrible. They seemed like they were completely lost on what their assignments were. It was really reminiscent of last year, which is the last thing we want to say about this new team, right? Switch out so many guys. And yeah, I mean, for Rondo, I think a lot of it's going to start at the defensive end, because when they can get those, when they can get the pace pushing off misses and off fast breaks, that's when, you know, we've seen them at their best this year. But when that doesn't happen, the half court offense is going to be ugly because they just don't have enough shooting. So yeah, I mean, it all starts with defense, and it's tough to have a ton of faith in their defense after watching what Indiana did to them last night.
Let me ask you guys this: what do you think is going to happen first? Wade and Rondo punch Nico, or Nico gets traded first?
Yeah, so Nico has totally taken over as like the most polarizing Bull, right? Like, Rose was the most polarizing.
Someone had to take the mantle after Powell left.
Yeah, and I think it's Nico right now. He did not score last night. He was pretty terrible, but I'm still on the pro Nico bandwagon. I feel like they need his shooting. He doesn't pass the eye test, but his advanced numbers have always been pretty good. I mean, what do you think about him, Mitch?
You're right. So, if you know, they always talk about how, you know, Billy Beane like didn't watch Oakland games and he could get a better perspective on the team if he just didn't watch. I feel like if you don't watch Bulls games and you just watch the box score, as you said, Nico is fine. But there are just like 4 to 7 plays every game where you're just like, what the fuck, dude? What the fuck?
Like how are you a professional basketball player?
Right. Like, he has his plays where just like, how did he make it this far? Like, he became a high school player, you know, and then he played professionally for so many years, and now he's in the Bulls. He's an NBA player. Like, how does an NBA player make those plays? But, you know,
there's no appendicitis to blame it on this year.
Yeah. If you take away those plays, the Bulls, you know, one of the refreshing things I think about this Bulls team is that they really have the potential to have a really decent bench, right? When MCW comes back, and you throw Wade in that second team, you know, at the beginning of the second quarter with McDermott and with Nico, and I prefer Felicio so much to Portis, but we'll talk about that later. That second team can work. So it's just a question about what you're doing with Nico. You know, I think it was the Celtics game. Nico played like the last 18 minutes of the game, right? And I just don't think that you can really do that. And you especially can't play him with Portis because he gets exposed on that front line. But Nico and Doses works. Nico playing 30 minutes, I just don't know.
Yeah, I do often think that when their offense gets stagnant, that they just need him on the floor. And that's why I like what Hoiberg was doing early in the year. I don't remember what happened last night exactly, but with Doug and Nico as his first two subs, those two guys coming in early, giving the starters a little bit of shooting. Because if you just look at Nico's box score numbers, I mean, he had 14 against the Knicks. He had 17 against the Celtics on 3 of 6 shooting. So he was drawing a lot of free throws. He had, 8 of 11 from the foul line in that game. 16 against Brooklyn, 15 in the opener against the Celtics. Like, he's had some good games already this season. He's put up, you know, double-digit points in, you know, 4 games. So, man, I'm not out on Nico, but if he could just find some consistency, it's going to be really interesting with him heading into, free agency this offseason. Ryan Anderson got 4 years, $80 million. He's a lot older than Mirotić is. He's put up better, more consistent numbers throughout his career, but I just wonder if Nico's even going to be on the team next season as an unrestricted free agent, because they're going to have to pay him a ton of money. And if, you know, everyone's already rolling their eyes at him when he's only making, you know, whatever it is this year, $6-7 million a year, what do you think that's going to be like when he's making $20 million?
Oh, I don't know, you talk about those box scores numbers, 8 for 11 in that, you know, that Boston game, but just two just giant misses from the free throw line with about a minute 20 left.
Yeah.
That just basically ended the game.
Right.
It's just the stuff like that. And it'll be interesting to see. I mean, I don't know if you can really talk yourself into saying letting him walk. I don't know. I mean, I don't know.
Hey, if the Bulls front office can trade Tony Snell for MCW, I'm pretty sure they can trade Nico for Anthony Davis. I think the most disappointing thing about, you know, these past 3 games is that the Fred Hoiberg Coach of the Year campaign has now been put on hold. I was ready to, you know, anoint him or actually, I guess, turn the corner on him because, you know, I'm not someone who has the most trust or confidence in Fred and his coaching abilities. And I was really impressed, at least with the first 3 games, that, look, he's got his team to buy into his system. They're moving the ball. They're getting out transition. He's turning Dwayne Wade and Jimmy Butler into 3-point shooters. And maybe Hoiball actually does work. And then, you know, as Mitch, you were saying, that he had some questionable lineup decisions at the end of the Boston game. And who knows how this pans out, because we're back to kind of how I've been feeling about him in this past year.
Yeah, people really jumped on top of him for playing Portis and Nico kind of at the end of that game. And Todd was struggling that game, and they came back from down 16. So there could be a case that could be made that, you know, maybe that individual decision was bad, even though I think it was. But, you know, the one thing that bothers me so much as a Bulls fan is, like, and maybe this was because Tibbs was so good at it, and maybe the advanced numbers don't suggest this. I haven't looked at the advanced numbers, but does it seem to you that the Bulls are just terrible out of timeouts? They've had two to three straight games. I don't know if it's two or three where they've got 24 second violations out of timeouts. Like, why? Yeah. How does that happen?
And it's not just, you know, limited to this year. You look at last year, where I felt like there were a few instances where they couldn't even get the ball out of bounds, where they were turning the ball over on a 5-second call, and you got to put that strictly on the coach. If you can't draw up a simple, you know, after timeout play to get the ball in bounds, that's very alarming, very concerning, that, you know, maybe Fred maybe Fred isn't about this life.
Ricky, what were you going to say? I think you're trying to chime in.
Yeah, like there's tons of evidence at this point that Hoiberg is really bad out of timeouts. Personally, I would be willing to kind of overlook that if they were playing like that super fast-paced style that we saw the first three games and if everyone was actually buying in to what Hoiberg wants them to do. But that didn't happen at all the last two games, in particular against the Knicks and against the Pacers. Really, what kept the Bulls in those games was their offensive rebounding, and that's kind of the antithesis of, you know, how Hoiberg wants to play. So if they're not buying into the system, yeah, I mean, it's going to be a long year.
I want to shift gears here and talk a little bit about, of course, Derrick Rose and Joakim Noah's homecoming Friday night, Bulls-Knicks. First time those two were playing, wearing a different uniform at the United Center. I don't know about you guys, but, you know, I had basically spent the last 2 days getting a little emotional about the Cubs. And just when I thought that I could get my emotions in check, here comes Derrick Rose and Joakim Noah back in town, you know, being, of course, responsible for many, many happy moments in the past, you know, 6-7 years of my Bulls fandom. Something to come out of it that I guess is a little controversial, maybe not amongst us, but there were a stammering of boos when Derek was announced. How'd you guys feel about that? And was there justification for it?
So they didn't show the introductions on TV, so I didn't see any of that. But I can tell you that when Rose got the ball, you know, in the early portion of the game, in the first quarter, they were booing him like he was LeBron. Every single time he touched the ball, they were just going crazy booing him. And I was shocked to hear that, personally. Like, I disagreed with it, for one. But I was also like, what's the justification for that? I feel like these fans think that Rose left the team voluntarily. He was traded. He was under contract, and he was traded. So, like,
they're ignorant. Those UC fans are ignorant.
I don't even think it's that. I just think that, and let me take a sidebar here. If you were booing Derrick Rose because of your objections to his personal life, or right. you think that there is, you know, some crazy stuff going on with his trial, and it may be true, listen, all right to boo him. I just don't think that was the population that was booing him. I've seen it for the last 2 years, and we talked about it last week. I thought he was going to get booed. People simply think that he was a coward for not coming back from the knee injury, and people just were so dismayed with the whole thing about him not playing with pace and the whole thing with him, his production going down. He just became a really unpopular player with the Bulls, and I think you saw that. I don't understand it. I don't understand.
Yeah, and don't forget about his comments that he made where he claimed that Chicago fans took him for granted. And I forget the exact quote, but I think it also implied that the New York fans were showing him more love. And, you know, honestly, I was going to say,
true.
To the point about Chicago fans taking for granted, there's truth to that. You know, this guy brought Chicago back to relevance, the youngest MVP in the history of the league, you know, wears a number in tribute to Chicago, did things for the community, and yet you still want to shit on him. You know, it was bogus, in my opinion.
What's wild is that, like, when Carter Williams tried to wear number one, the fans, like, emoji bombed his Instagram page with Rose emojis and basically bullied him out of wearing the number. Clearly, like, there's a large percentage of the fan base. I don't know what it is, maybe 50%, maybe 40%, who still feels really strongly and, you know, maybe defensively about Rose. I think we probably all fall into that category. But then, yeah, everyone else hates him. And it's just so weird to me that he would get that reception, because obviously he's super polarizing. We've learned that just being around the city the last few years. Like, you know, even in your own families, someone's going to love Rose, someone's going to hate Rose. It's just
right.
the way it goes. But, like, for him to get booed like that was wild.
Yeah, I think – I don't want to make it a big deal. I think there's probably a weird kind of race thing going on with Derrick Rose. I also think that – it kind of depends upon what you think about the injury, right? If you look at the ACL injury and you can kind of say he was never the same again, he tried really hard to work back and just couldn't get to that level of play, then I think you're fine with Derrick Rose. If you think that Derrick Rose milked the injury, if you don't use the knee injury to kind of take into context his worsened play over the last couple of years, then I think that you probably are a person that is more likely to kind of just boo and just be really disappointed with the way things went down over the last couple of years.
I want you guys to be honest with this next question as continued Derrick Rose fans, even though he's wearing a New York Knicks uniform. Be honest, were you happy that the Bulls lost against the Knicks on Friday?
I mean, my personal answer for this is I wanted the Bulls to just crush the Knicks. I thought that would have been really funny if they just would have came out and smoked DeRozan and Noah. Like, that's what I was rooting for personally. It obviously didn't happen.
I'm a Bulls fan, so I was rooting for the Bulls. But like, after hearing the booing, and I was, you know, watching it at my neighborhood bar, and there were like people aggressively rooting against Derrick Rose. And it just made me so mad that I wasn't happy that the Bulls lost, but I was like happy that those people's nights were ruined. Like, I was happy like they were really pissed off that Derrick Rose, you know, whatever he did, and like Derrick Rose came back and they had to watch like Joakim Noah and Derrick Rose skip off the floor after being subbed after a Knicks win. So I wasn't happy that the Bulls lost, but I was certainly happy that those particular fans had to deal with, you know, those two coming in and getting the win.
You guys aren't going to believe this, but you can be happy that you can be upset that the Bulls lost and also be happy for Derek and Joe, because that's kind of the bucket that I fell in. I mean, it was nice to see them perform and, you know, play. Derek had a double double with points and assists. I think Joe Kim also had a double double with points and rebounds. And you got a vintage Joe Kim performance. What was kind of interesting about the whole Knicks situation is that I did not realize, or it didn't feel like Melo was involved at all during the game, and yet he put up 25 points. So
25.
It was such a quiet 25. I mean, you know, you felt the impact from Chris Stapps. Obviously, Joe and Derek made their presences felt. But I was like, man, Melo's not getting any touches, not getting any buckets. And then I look at the box score and he had 25.
One more thing. Jerry Reinsdorf basically called Joakim Noah washed in the offseason. And, you know, we talked a lot about Derek, but shout out to Joakim for having his best game of the season after the owner, for literally no reason, just called him like terrible. And if you think that, like, why bring it up for a guy who was so just a rock star in the community, dealing with gun violence in the city, like, you know, always worked hard, came back from injuries, always gritted it out, and then you benched him, and then you kind of lied on him being benched. Like, shout out to Joe for just like shutting up Reinsdorf.
The irony in all of this is that Derek left involuntarily because he was traded, as you mentioned, Ricky. And Joakim was the one who left voluntarily in free agency, yet Joe gets all the love and Derek gets shit on. Obviously, we know why, but it was just ironic in my view. Let's move on to Bowl of the Week. Basically, the MVP from this past week, despite you know, going 1-3. Who you guys got?
I think that my Bowl of the Week, he didn't play, like, he didn't produce, but Dwayne Wade's game against the Knicks was fantastic. And I think if you want to take away anything from these three losses, I think the biggest takeaway positively is that I think we have a player that was much better than advertised. That when it comes down to kind of big games, when it comes down to if we get to the playoffs, playoff games, we have a guy who can take it to another level. So, you know, we still lost that game against the Knicks. He came back in Indiana, played 22 minutes, shot terribly, kind of probably shouldn't have even played that game. But when it comes down to it, I think we have a guy in Wade that can really get back to that star level. So for that reason, he would be my Bull of the Week.
I think that's nice. But as you mentioned with, you know, the second of the back-to-back and how he just basically laid a turd, 2009 Flash, 2009 Dwayne Wade, I think we have to set our expectations that that's going to be more of the exception than the norm here. I mean, it is nice that, you know, he still has it in him every now and then, but how often is that going to pop up?
Well, I think that the ability to, you know, hit the three, stretch the floor. I mean, I don't find this three-point shooting thing fluky, just because he was a really good mid-range shooter, so it makes sense for him to kind of step out a couple of feet and hit the three. I just think something he didn't really have to do as a younger player. So I think that's going to supplement whatever loss of athleticism he has. But with that said, I don't think it's going to be the exception. I just think you have a really nice player, and you only have to be your second best player. So, I mean, that's the reason why I came up with that. What do you think, Ricky?
I kind of want to go with Butler here, even though he was sloppy on both ends last night. He had 6 turnovers. We already noted that he blew some defensive assignments. Still had 16 points on 7 shots, and I thought he was pretty underrated in the New York game. Obviously, Dwayne Wade stole the show there at the end, but Butler was keeping him in it for a while until Wade came alive. He had 26 points in that game, 7-15 shooting. He was good against Boston the other night before, 23 points, 9 rebounds. So, yeah, I mean, Jimmy bringing just like consistent effort and bailout options late in the shot clock situations where you can just like set him a screen, have him go to the basket. He's drawing just a ton of fouls right now. He's making 87% of his free throws. So, I mean, you know, it's almost like we're taking Butler for granted here a little bit.
I
wonder what people's opinions of Butler are for fans around the city, because obviously there was a ton of trade rumors with him. Just like the way the team's been bad the last 2 years as he's made his ascent, I feel like Bulls fans aren't all in on Jimmy Butler, which is kind of interesting because he's consistently exceeded expectations. But yeah, I mean, I think I'm going to go Butler just because, you know, he's the one guy we could really count on at this point to give him good production every night.
Yeah, I wouldn't argue with that as well. I wouldn't argue with that. And he was – this special shout-out to his performance in that Celtics game. Bulls got it back. I think they got the game back tied, down 16, and he was the real reason why the Bulls got back. So I definitely agree with you there.
I'm really interested to see how Jimmy handles – losing going forward. You know, this is the first stretch of adversity this team is facing. And of course, you know, when they started out 3-0, we were hearing all the right quotes and how this team likes each other. They work hard. Practice is intense. And, you know, this is why, you know, you see those results. Well, I think I saw a quote last night from Casey Johnson, mentioning how Butler said, you know, we're not even competing out there. It looks like we're not even competing out there. And we obviously know.
You're all over again.
Right, right. You know, how fast are the wheels going to come off? I think we'll know how comfortable Butler was with bringing in Rondo and Wade once, you know, the losing continues to happen. You know, maybe he isn't as happy.
Time out. Was Casey Jones the bad guy from Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles?
No, he was the good guy. He was the good guy.
Was he the good guy?
I thought he helped the Turtles.
Yeah, he wore a hockey mask.
Right.
Really, yeah.
Okay.
Wasn't he hooking up with April O'Neil too?
I think in the movies he was. I feel like in the cartoons that I watched as a kid, he like wasn't a good guy. I don't remember. I don't know. I just shout out to Casey Jones. Shout out to people in Rock City too. That arcade game. Like, if I ever get rich, sidebar. If I ever get rich, like my whole. I've had this feeling since I was 8 years old. I want to have an arcade in my basement. And I constantly rank things. NBA Jam, obviously, number one. X-Men Arcade, number two. Turtles Arcade, number three. That'd be the third game I get, right above Golden Tee.
You know, there's like a game store in our area where I live. And one thing that they have, which is way beyond my means, is a Space Jam pinball machine. And basically, that would be at the top of my list right now.
And you got the space for it, man. You moved down there. You got the basement. You can do it. You got to do it. First, you got to get the basketball court. After you get the basketball court, Space Jam pinball, I'm ready for it. My body is ready.
All right. Going back to Bowl of the Week, one thing I want to say is that you guys are totally overthinking this. The default answer for Bowl of the Week is none other than MCW. You know, the Bulls are still undefeated when he plays. You know, he's going to be the Mike Dunleavy of this year, where as long as he's healthy and in the lineup, the Bulls have to be the favorites to win that game. So MCW, it has to be the Bull of the Week until proven otherwise.
Let me take a step back real quick. Is there ever going to be a situation in this season where we're talking about MCW starting over Rondo?
For sure. Definitely, right?
Is that hard
to believe? I don't think.
No, it's not hard to believe, but what do you think Hoiberg has can he do that? Can he pull that trigger? Does he have that in him?
It's not going to be Hoiberg pulling that trigger. It's going to be Wade. I think Wade has basically been, you know, the de facto leader of this team and basically a coach on the floor for Hoiberg. I mean, Rondo has gotten a little bit of that praise, but if that were to happen, the way that I see that happening is Wade basically taking Hoiberg aside and maybe even talking to Rondo and saying, look, we're shitty right now. It's because of our point guard play. We need to mix things up a little bit. And I'm asking you to fall back and start the game on the bench.
Yeah,
That's the only scenario I see unfolding here.
Yeah, I want to clarify that I think it's a no-brainer that the argument will happen, at least among the fan base. But for Hoiberg to actually pull the trigger on that, that would really be something. So I don't know. It's a great question.
On a more serious note, you know, to give the my bull of the week to someone that actually played in the games, I'm just going to give it to Taj. I think he deserves some praise. He's just a professional basketball player. He averaged nearly a double-double this week between points and rebounds. I think he was a little over 9 points, nine boards. And he's just solid. You know, with the absence of Joe and Powell, I feel like he's really showcasing his abilities right now and has probably been the most reliable bull over the last few years when you think about it. So big ups to Taj for just continuing to produce no matter what's asked from him, whether it be, you know, starting or coming off the bench. Taj has just been solid.
Absolutely.
All right, looking ahead here, we got the Bulls at home against Orlando on Monday, followed by a back-to-back on the road at Atlanta, then Miami, which of course is Dwayne Wade's own homecoming to his former team, and then at home again against Washington on Saturday. Guys, Mitch, we'll start with you. What's your prediction for this week?
I say the Bulls go 2-2. That's my prediction. Say they win in Orlando, lose at Atlanta, they win in Miami, and they lose to Washington at home.
Ricky, do you agree?
I'm going to cop out and say that I don't really want to give a prediction yet because I am currently extremely embarrassed by going on a little tweet storm about how good the Bulls were after the beatdown that crappy Nets team. Now that they suck again, I regret those tweets, and I feel like I look like an idiot. So I'm going to hold off because I don't know what team we're getting. If they're going to play like the first three games or the last three, those first three games, man, those were really convincing. And then it all fell apart.
I'm going to play my flag. The Bulls are better than expectations, right? They're not going to be the two seed, right? But I do think that Dwayne Wade being able to be really good and the problems being fixable to a certain extent will lead the Bulls to be a little bit better than expectations. I don't know.
And it's pretty great that it seems like they can count on their offensive rebounding every game. So far, every game, they've finished with a significant advantage over the opponent in offensive rebounding. That might not be Hoiball, but it's pretty awesome to watch. And when it happens, if it keeps happening every game, I should say, I think that'll be, you know, a nice boost for him.
Well, what's so funny about the whole offensive rebounding thing is that that's such a staple of the Tibbs era Bulls, right? Like back in the day,
right?
We saw Tibbs' offense basically be throw the ball at the hoop and hope for a rebound. Like Derrick Rose had so many Kobe assists just based off that, and now we're seeing it more materialized under Hoiberg, which I think is just hilarious. You know what's really funny, and I guess ironic, is that amongst the three of us, I'm probably the one most down on the Bulls. Yet I'm predicting that they go 3-1 this week.
Yeah, you never bought in. I'll say this: you planted your flag on. Like, I don't know, guys.
Right. Like I still don't see it working. I mean, I tweeted out earlier this week the biggest surprise or nicest surprise has been how good Dwayne Wade has been, as we talked about, and how much I've just been enamored with him. And it's how nice it is to have a guy that can take over games and that can basically just be a matchup problem for anyone opposite him. But, you know, looking at the schedule, Orlando's been terrible. I think the Bulls bounce back on Monday. I think they lose against Atlanta. I wouldn't be surprised if Wade sits out that game, because we all know that Wade wants to exact his revenge on Pat Riley and his former team on Thursday night against the Heat. So I think they win that game, similar to what basically Rose and Noah did to us this past week. And I think the Wizards are still a question mark, kind of similar to the Bulls, which you don't know what type of team you're getting. And I think that the Bulls pull one out since they're at home. So I'm actually looking at this week pretty optimistically that the Bulls pull off a 3-1 record.
I hope so, because I feel like the Bulls show is at its best when we can all be optimistic. I think a lot of the chatter around the Bulls on the internet is so negative all the time that it's kind of nice that it feels like the Bulls show likes to be the hype man, likes to get excited about stuff.
I saw you,
hard to get excited after last night.
I saw you tweet at our friend Stephen No and you know his podcast team about how they're a bit more level-headed, and I almost wanted to respond, but I was worried that I was going to be taken the wrong way. I almost wanted to respond by saying, "Do you even hot take, bro?"
No, are we going to start a podcast beef?
No. I love those dudes. What you trying to do? But I agree with Ricky that, you know,
Steven, fuck your report cards. Nah. Gary Jordan is like the best follow on Twitter when it comes to the Bulls.
So good.
He is so good. I don't know why he doesn't have a million followers. Like, if you're a Bulls fan, Hungarian Jordan is like by far the best.
If you're like looking for in-depth analysis and stats and really insightful stuff, then you got to listen to one of these other podcasts because I'm just here for the jokes.
Yeah. Facts don't matter.
I agree, Rick. And that's what we were even talking about last week, why we took, you know, that hiatus. What I didn't get to explain was that, you know, there were some real life responsibilities that popped up between work and, you know, having a kid that has been screaming the last half hour, where I'm a little worried that DCFS is going to pop up to my front door next week if they can hear those screams, since I'm spending my time, you know, recording a podcast with you guys as opposed to being a dad. But don't worry, guys. And anyone listening, the wife, the mom is with him and calming him down. So he's all good now. I got the text message that he's calmed down. So don't come after me that I'm a deadbeat.
So basically what you're saying is if Bulls go 0-4 this week, you probably won't hear from the Bulls show ever again.
Again, you don't want to hear the doom and gloom and us just sitting on the Bulls. Like, who wants to hear about that? I know that when any of my teams lose, whether it be the Cubs, the Bulls, the Bears, I basically go in a shell and try to stay away from social media and not read all of the articles, because I don't want to read about that stuff, how the Bulls are shitty. So
we're constantly on a 7-day contract.
Right. This is the Bulls show. You're number one source for fair weather fans. All right, we're going to wrap things up with what we call the fast break, a quick look around the league. I got four questions for you guys to see, get your thoughts on, you know, everything that's happening in the NBA. Probably the biggest thing that happened in the league in the past few days, of course, was the first matchup between Kevin Durant and his new team, the Golden State Warriors, against his old team. More importantly, the troll god, Russell Westbrook. What I want to get your thoughts on, Ricky and Mitch, is, are you Team Westbrook or Team Durant at this point?
I'm Team Westbrook for sure, just because I love Westbrook's personality. He is just petty as hell, and I eat it up completely. And I was running the SB Nation NBA Twitter account for that game. And that account has like something like, you know, 80,000 fans or whatever it is. And so I put a tweet poll up. It said, you know, once and for all, Westbrook versus Durant. 3,000 people voted on this. Choice A, Westbrook. Choice B, Durant. 72% chose Westbrook. He's the internet hero. I'm here for Westbrook. I'm not going to be the person who's, you know, going against him. Russ forever.
Yo,
Mitch.
Westbrook over here, dog.
It's so easy to pick Westbrook because obviously he's the one who stayed, and Kevin Durant is being viewed as, you know, the quote unquote coward who, if you can't beat him, you got to join him.
Yep.
But you know what's
chicken?
You know, I'm going Team KD. I'm going to ride with Durant.
And you're not doing it just for the podcast. You've really just off a podcast. I've always been Team KD in this situation.
You know what it is, and you know, talking about fairweather fans and jumping on the bandwagon, with the Bulls being, you know, as mediocre and as terrible as they've been the last, you know, couple of years, I've had to adopt a new team, and the team that I've adopted has been the Warriors. I mean, that's really easy for me to say.
So terrible.
But I actually am a fan of the Warriors. I love watching them play.
Oh my god! Oh.
And you know, it just like
I'm when LeBron this out. Left.
when LeBron left for the Heat, I was salty at LeBron because he wasn't joining my team, and Durant, of course, has joined one of my teams.
Oh
now,
my god.
I'm not going to say that I'm like the biggest Golden State fan.
Oh my god!
You know what? A second. Let's cut this out. Let's cut this part out. But okay. Here's what I want to say about the whole Westbrook Durant feud. It totally reminded me of, you know, a WWF beef.
Yes,
where the heel, like heel as in Westbrook, was just talking so much shit, and, you know, not necessarily talking explicitly. He had all these, I guess, not subtweets, but, you know, little digs that were not maybe as easily as identified as maybe after the fact. You had the cupcake Instagram post. Of course, you had the official photographer vest. You know, he was you know, sending all these digs KD's way, and then KD just torched him, or torched their team, you know, dropping, you know, 39 points on 7 threes. And it was just funny. It was like the, at least in my eyes, the good guy just beating down the bad guy that was doing all of these WWF promos saying how he's going to kick his ass. And it didn't turn out that way. And the good guy, again, in my viewpoint, ended up winning.
We have to talk about the official photographer vest, though, because to me, that is the funniest thing that's happened to the NBA all season, and maybe even longer than that. Do you guys believe the official photographer outfit was a shot at Kevin Durant, whose hobbies include photography? I just want a yes or a no on this. Do you think that was an actual shot at Durant?
Mitch, you go first.
We talked about this for a long time. Yes, I guess. Yes.
It's just too random to not be a coincidence, if that makes any sense. You know what I'm saying? Right. Like out of all the games he could have worn that, I mean, and at first, it totally seemed like a stretch. But then after, like, reading more people post about it, I'm like, holy shit, this guy's the next level genius.
I don't even get why it's funny. It's just too much of a coincidence. Like, it's so weird. So weird.
Like, what's Westbrook's next move here? Like, I mean, does he stay quiet until, you know, Durant comes to OKC? Or, you know, I guess, yeah, what could you possibly do to top the official photographer vest?
I think he's got to start coming out to that fuck Kevin Durant little beat.
Oh, yes.
Yes, please let
That's the next commercial. Let
the petty continue. Yeah, you know, something that I totally missed was the whole the Jordan commercial where the tagline was "Some run, some make runways." Yeah, that was. I didn't believe that was a direct shot at KD because that was kind of an inner brand shot. Right. Like, obviously, KD's a Nike guy, but, you know, maybe Westbrook is petty enough that, you know, he wanted to.
I think that was totally a shot, right? I don't, like, why would you, like, I don't know. I think that's totally a shot.
Yeah, but you got to remember that some, like, fucking dude who's our age in New York came up with that, you know, some copywriter came up with that tagline. Like,
yeah.
I don't know.
I mean, I think whoever that dude is shooting shots at Durant. Like, some 26-year-old dude in Williamsburg is out here just letting the cannon fly.
All right, next question in the fast break. Speaking of Westbrook, he's an early front runner for MVP, given the numbers that he's putting up and his team winning. Who's your guys' 2-week MVP, since there are a ton of candidates with some of the absurd numbers that guys are putting up? Mitch, we'll start with you.
You know what? It doesn't even matter what the stats say. Like, you're in the bag for the Warriors, I am in the bag for James Harden. Give me all the James Harden as a point god. I want it. I need it. I'm hoping this guy can lead the league in scoring and assists.
All right, there's only one answer for this question, and it's LeBron. The Cavs are the only undefeated team, I believe, correct? LeBron, he's putting up, you know, somewhat modest numbers for his sake. He's only averaging 21, 10, and 8, like, whatever. You can basically do that asleep. But the Cavs' offense just looks absurdly good right now. And, like, you know, it's LeBron. LeBron's the best. I'm totally on LeBron at this point, you know, after no longer viewing him as Chicago's rival because he beat us down repetitively year after year after year after year. So, you know, now he's in his 13th year. I'm team LeBron. I like LeBron. And
I am just so happy that finally a Chicago team didn't suffer a postseason exit with LeBron in the building. When Rajai, I think that's how you say his name, Rajai Davis hit that 2-run homer to tie the game up and they cut to LeBron. I'm like, it's the curse of LeBron, man. Chicago's not going to win a championship as long as he's present or in the way. But yeah, as we know, we survived that. That's Ricky, that's actually a perfect segue to my next question. Are the Cavs ever going to lose a game?
It would, like, what do you think their record would be if LeBron, like, was trying to break the Warriors record? If LeBron wanted to go 74-8 and was, you know, not taking 2 weeks off to fuel up, let's say, in Miami, what do you think their record would be? I think they could come somewhat close. Like, I think they would win high 60s, maybe even have a shot at, like, getting a 70th win.
I think it's probably possible. You know, the one
thing we're talking about a dude who had Steph Curry and Klay Thompson cookies at his Halloween party in a 3-1 lead. Like,
that was so great.
So there's no doubt in my mind that not only is LeBron trying to chase the ghost of Michael Jordan, I mean, I think he just hates this Warriors team with a passion. And if they're close come, you know, February, March, to even being within range of that record, I could see him wanting to push it, because that'd be the only one of the only things that he wouldn't have over the Warriors, I guess, at this point. Mitch, what were you going to say?
Oh, sorry about that.
Oh, my God. I'm just seeing these cookies right now. The Steph and Klay cookies. Unbelievable.
You didn't see that earlier?
No.
Yeah.
Even Westbrook's got to be proud of that.
Yeah. I mean, that's not even trolling. That's just – I don't know.
They put Steph Curry's name on a tombstone.
Did you see Klay Thompson's reaction to it?
I'm not even dead yet. Does that make sense?
Hey, facts only, man. Facts only.
Did you see? I'm surprised Ricky hasn't seen that. Ricky, did you see the drum set?
Yeah, I saw the 3-1 drum set for sure. It is kind of funny that LeBron put 3-1 jokes all around Cleveland, only to see Cleveland blow a 3-1 lead.
Right. I saw that Cleveland 3-1 shirt, and I was like, is that a diss or is that like? What is that?
I don't know. I was happy that basically the circle of sports or the circle of life came together, where I think I mentioned this on last podcast, you know, the Cavs paid it forward. They came back from 3-1 against Golden State, and then the Cubs came back 3-1 against the Indians.
Yep.
How good is it going to be to see LeBron in like a full Cubs uniform for you? are you going to love that?
That's going to be incredible. I think that was, you know, obviously winning a World Series for the first time in 108 years was, you know, the number one priority. But I'd say a not too distant second was seeing LeBron in Chicago Cubs gear.
I need like, so did he pay up this bet yet?
No, it's going to be when he visits Chicago.
Right, that's what I thought. Right. So I need like the cleats. I want him to have like a donut, carrying a bat in, have like a donut on the bat. I need him to go all out on this, because I think that would be hilarious.
I'm just wondering whose jersey he wears, or if he gets like a custom made one that says James 23. It'll be interesting.
I'm sure the Cubs will be sending one his way.
Hey, you know what? This hopefully isn't the last time that Dwayne Wade convinces LeBron to wear a Chicago jersey.
Hey.
Stay woke. Stay woke. All right, hey, we'll wrap up this episode with this. Give me your guys' League Pass game of the week, if you had a chance to look at the schedule. Who are you peeping on League Pass this week?
All right, November 11th. This sounds weird, right? But the Charlotte Hornets versus the Toronto Raptors. All right, my case is, have you guys seen what DeMar DeRozan is doing right now? I mean, DeMar DeRozan thinks he's Jordan. 40 points, 32 points, 33 points, 40 points, 34 points. He's getting paid $378 million for a reason. Also, Kemba Walker. You got to have a great player when you're cruising, trolling League Pass on a Friday night. Kemba Walker is one of those dudes, best crossover in the league.
All right, here's my premium League Pass game. The absolutely atrocious New Orleans Pelicans taking on my Milwaukee Bucks. Jabari's been awesome lately. Giannis is like legitimately maybe a top 10 player this year. He's playing out of his mind. Rashad Vaughn hit like 4 threes. Snell is doing some things sometimes. I don't know. It'll be cool to see him go against Lance, Etuan, Anthony Davis, and the rest of the Pelicans. So that's just a trash game that League Pass has made for.
Is Frazier still starting for the Pelicans?
What's up?
Is Tim Frazier still starting for the Pelicans?
I'm not sure.
Tim Frazier wasn't a good Big Ten point guard. It's like the same thing in football with like Simmons, the starting quarterback of the Broncos, and he wasn't really good on Northwestern. Their roster just, oh my God.
Lance, I think Lance is their second best player this year.
Oh my God. Like, how does a GM come up with a roster that bad?
Hashtag free Anthony Davis.
Right?
I want to give my my league pass game of the week. I'm currently scrolling through my phone to look at the schedule, just trying to find when the Warriors are playing.
Oh my god!
You don't have like, a schedule on your fridge, long time fan.
I just thought you would have that memorized, right? Like,
yeah, you'd be surprised. I can't believe I'm just thinking about how much shit I'm gonna get for claiming that I've just jumped on the Warriors bandwagon so hard. But hey, no, in all seriousness, the game that I'm probably looking forward to the most, I think, is this week, is Raptors against OKC. It looks like that's on Wednesday, and kind of for the same reasons that you mentioned, Mitch. I want to see if what DeMar's doing is sustainable, if he's gonna continue doing it, and of course, the walking triple double himself, the troll god Russell Westbrook, if he's going to continue putting up those numbers. And so I think that's going to be pretty entertaining.
Yep.
All right, I think that'll do. Was there anything else, gentlemen?
That's it, man.
Hey, well, appreciate you guys listening, for tuning in. You can check out the show on SoundCloud, and I think we're gonna get back on iTunes this week.
Back on iTunes this week. Last week we were not, but we got it fixed up. And we will be back on iTunes, both episodes.
And, of course, Vloggable.com, where you can also check out Ricky's work as part of the SB Nation community. Make sure you give us a follow on Twitter. Ricky is at SBN underscore Ricky. Mitch is at Sharon LG. Can you repeat it for me?
It's at Sharon, SharonILJP. So at Sharon, ILJP.
Has your follower count increased at all since last week?
No, it hasn't at all. I'm going to be – so. Listen, people don't want the hot takes on bond reform. I don't understand why. People aren't down with, you know, disgusting gun legislation. I don't understand why. But nah, I'm good. I'm good over here.
After your guest appearance in the New York Times this week, quoted as the official source for all opinions on Derrick Rose.
Yes.
I think that was a bit of a bump.
I should have introduced you as, you know, New York Times
source.
Yeah, New York Times source.
I'm embedded in the Chicago community, man.
Right. By the way, how'd you get hooked up with that?
Just a friend of, I think Ricky wrote the article, and he put me in touch with him. And
yeah, Scott wanted to know if there were any quote unquote normal Bulls fans who talked to him about the story. And the first person I thought of, obviously, is Mitch.
Well, that's awesome. If you haven't seen that article, I know that Ricky's tweeted it out. Myself, I've tweeted it out. Mitch, you have it on your feed. Just a nice perspective on D. Rose and, of course, his homecoming. And kind of makes real sad with your last quote there that was featured in the article. Yeah, I won't spoil it for anyone that hasn't listened to or read it.
Yeah, my wife read it. She was like, holy shit, do you really feel that way? That's super sad. she was like, are you okay? Yeah.
All right, guys. Well, thanks for listening. Also, check me out at The Bulls Show on Twitter. And we'll see you guys next week.
Shout out to Brad Miller. Oh.